Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. So Hickey is leading the charge. Pay the price. Let's get Bryce for his Indianapolis Colts. I keep on telling him that the Colts are going to wind up with C.J. Stroud, but we'll see how that does play out coming up in the next 2 months as the NFL draft is in late April when they will be in Kansas City for the first round of that draft on that Thursday night, so we will find out. Now, we haven't really talked about what we want my team to do, Hickey, because my team is in unfamiliar territory, or maybe it's starting to get familiar the last 2 years, where the Patriots are sitting there with the 14th pick in the NFL draft. And I saw Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft recently, and it was Christian Gonzalez, the cornerback out of Oregon. Now, I'm not telling you that I hate this pick if that ends up coming to fruition, but with that being said, taking a corner doesn't really do much for me when you have the 14th overall pick. I'm a fan. I want a number one wide receiver for Mac Jones. If that's the guy that you're going to continue to build with moving forward, you got to put him in a position to succeed. It's a good start that they finally got Bill O'Brien in there, and you're not going to have Matt Patricia, who's a bozo, and Joe Judge, who's a bozo, calling plays and being an instrumental role in the development of one Mac Jones. So I would love a number one wide receiver, but if I'm telling you to start to get into the mindset that maybe your team will not go on out there and get Bryce Young, I have to hold myself to the same standards because I believe in a system of honesty and, you know, us, you know, kind of playing under the same standards. So if you're telling me my team can't get a Jaxon Smith-Njigba, can't get Addison, the receiver out of USC, and it was in Pittsburgh the year before that, or if they can't get the wide receiver from TCU, Quinton Johnson, who, by the way, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I don't know if this surprises you, Hickey, in Jeremiah's mock draft. Jaxon Smith-Njigba ended up going 20th, and Quinton Johnson ended up going 21. Don't you feel like those wide receivers will be off the board by then? Or do you think both could still be in play when the 20th and 21st pick is available?
Were they the first two receivers off the board for Daniel Jeremiah?
No. The other, I think Addison did go before that. Let me just see. I'm trying to find it. Yes, Jordan Addison went 12 to the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I think both. Now I think we're starting to see wide receivers kind of be like quarterbacks. We're kind of seeing their stock elevate a little bit more.
Well, last year, didn't we have three go back-to-back-to-back? It was the Ohio State wide receivers, right?
It was Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams,
who transferred from Ohio State to Alabama.
I believe in that order because both the Lions and the Saints traded up.
Yeah.
Respect. I think it was bing, bang, boom. I think it was 10 Jets. I think Jameson was 11, I believe, and then Chris Olave 12.
To the Saints.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Three and four picks, whatever it was, but there was a little bit of a run right after the top 10.
Like, I just got to think that those three players go in the top 15, right?
You would think, again, because a lot of those teams, especially when you have a team like the Eagles in there and, like, established teams where, again, it's not just you need everything, it's...
Well, I don't think the Eagles would draft a wide receiver.
No, fair. I mean, that was not a good example, but it's not, you know, your traditional top 10 of just 10 bad teams. It's the Seahawks in there. It's the Lions in there. And maybe those teams don't need a receiver, but it's more teams that are established where, again, you can kind of start to get luxury, if you will, more than just quarterback-focused or defensive back-focused.
Well, let's go locks for the top 15 picks. Jalen Carter is a lock. Bryce Young is a lock. Tyree Wilson, I would say, is a lock. I keep on seeing his name everywhere. C.J. Stroud, I would think, is a lock. Will Anderson Jr. is a lock. Outside of that, are there any other guys that you go are absolute locks in the top 15 of the draft?
I would probably say Will Levis.
Mm-hmm. Peter Skoronski, the tackle from Northwestern.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. So that's seven right there. Miles Murphy?
Probably. I put Jordan Addison in there as well.
Okay.
As receiver going off.
So I'm just saying, like, those are nine right now.
Anthony Richardson, just because the quarterbacks are inflated, like 10 out of 15.
Yeah, it's not crazy. I think all five quarterbacks who go in the first 15 picks. Devon Witherspoon, I see a lot of people talk about him out of Illinois, the corner. But, like, so those are some of your names. I just got to think that if we could just give you 9 or 10 names and you only said Addison, that you're going to see eventually Johnson go in the top 15 and Jaxon Smith-Njigba as well. Now, I'll tell you who, if I can't get a wide receiver, You know who I would love to see the Patriots take at 14? And I know he may not be perceived as the best tight end in the draft right now, but I think he will end up looking like the best tight end or being the best tight end of the draft. It's Dalton Kincaid out of Utah. I think Dalton Kincaid can be an absolute star at the next level. If I can't get a wide receiver, I would love the Patriots to draft Dalton Kincaid.
He's solid. I'll put Matthew Mayer above him, or Michael Mayer. Sorry, I don't know. I know Matthew. Oh, you know Matthew Mayer.
Yeah.
We both know Matthew Mayer.
Matthew Mayer went to high school with me and then went to college with Hot Take Hickey.
That's right. So, sorry, not Matthew. We do not want to draft Matthew Mayer.
Hickey may have muted him on social media, sources tell me.
I mean, guess we're just going to air some dirty laundry.
Well, Matthew Mayer actually talked to him the other day. My pal. He was he cooks up a bunch of meats on that Traeger grill.
Wow. That's when you know you're an adult. Traeger.
I slid into his DMs. When am I getting invited over for dinner, bro?
Maybe the Patriots tell him Patriots draft Matthew Mayer instead of Michael Mayer, and then you'll be getting some meat on your plate. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would slide right into that entourage. No doubt about that. So, but that's the guy right now as I sit here. Dalton Kincaid is who I would love to see on the Patriots if they can't get a wide receiver.
Now, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
I know history is history. Every year is different. You're not worried about Bill drafting a skill position player in the first round?
No. Wide receiver-wise?
Even tight end-wise.
Well, did he draft Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, we got one.
Well, I know he's someone that is an absolute disgusting human being, but Aaron Hernandez, when he was playing, was a dominant tight end as well.
All right, so out of the tight end group / wide receiver group, 2 out of 10 he's got, right?
Are you including running backs too in that? Like, I think Ramondre Stevenson's been a really good running back so far.
Talking about Lawrence Maroney, we could talk about a few other busts. Like, he's not, sure. The track record's not been good.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Chad Jackson was a disaster.
You got to do it, but I'll just say, I guess I didn't mind or didn't hate him.
Well, what am I supposed to be afraid? Like, the Colts can't pick a quarterback the last few years. What are you'd be afraid when they draft a quarterback in this draft with ballot
the
selection process?
Quarterbacks they've drafted has been very well.
No, I'm saying in their selection process in the last like two off seasons, they haven't done a good job picking a quarterback, Chris Ballard. Should all of a sudden you be afraid that Ballard's not going to be able to draft a quarterback here?
No, I think it's totally different.
Yeah, I think it goes from year to year. I really do. You know, he's sitting there at 14. I got to go get someone that's going to help Mac Jones in this draft. That's just the way that I look at it. And if they don't get someone that helps Mac Jones in this draft, I think they're doing a disservice to the development of Mac Jones, and then Mac Jones will be out of New England sooner rather than later if they don't get this offseason right. They have to get this offseason right. But, no, I don't doubt Belichick. Like, don't get me wrong. Wide receiving-wise? Yeah, concerning with his draft selection. But do I think he's incapable of drafting well? No. I do think some of the Belichick drafting, when he's been around that long, is a little blown out of proportion. Has it been perfect? Absolutely not. But for 20 years, I know he had Tom Brady there, so it does cover up some things. But for 20 years, I've been fine with the product that they put on the football field. Last year was the only time I was upset with the product that they put on the football field, and it was more so just because of the lack of coaching that they were providing the young quarterback in Mac Jones.
Look, history's not been on his side. Like I said, every year is different, but Bill, hopefully, I don't know if he changes his scouting tendencies, if he's allowing other people
guys to, won six
to
Super Bowls.
Focus.
Let's not make it out like the guy can't find a way to draft anyone. You know, he's had a lot of good draft
skill
picks.
Players, it's not been very good. He makes the most out of what he's got, and he's been, again, just like last year, he's made the most of a roster that was maybe not constructed or a coaching staff that wasn't constructed the best. That's one of his best attributes. But the fact is the fact, though. Make your life easier, not harder. And he's been unable, and when it comes to skill players, to do that sometimes, most times.
Yeah, I think with the way that he's been evaluating talent even outside of the draft, I'm not going to be sitting there shaking in my boots at 14 like, oh my goodness gracious, that they're gonna find a way to mess it up if they make a selection at 14. Like, my biggest concern is that they're not going to make a pick at 14 and they're going to trade back to acquire more assets. I don't want to do that. I want to get the best offensive player available that is at 14 to go help Mac Jones. You know, take quarterbacks out of that. I want to get the best offensive player that is not a quarterback at 14 to go help Mac Jones. You saw the Eagles, they drafted Devontae Smith, then got A.J. Brown. You saw the Dolphins, Jalen Waddle, then traded for Tyreek Hill. They need to hit on either a wide receiver or a tight end, and if they do that, that is a start of actually putting Mac Jones in a position to succeed. Because that's the most frustrating part, is I don't even know how to evaluate Mac Jones. It's kind of similar how Daniel Jones was the first few years with the Giants, because you haven't given him, well, the Jones thing is more coaching, but he hasn't got the right offensive coaching, Mac Jones. And then Mac Jones, or Daniel Jones, finally gets some good offensive coaching this year, and he made a bunch of no names turn out to get to the second round of the playoffs. So they already did the coaching part. Now I think that's where Bill has to redefine his approach. He has to start putting more talent around Mac Jones. When Brady was there, you could get rid of guys and it did not matter, because Brady was Brady and he's the greatest quarterback to ever do it. Mac has to go prove himself, and you got to put your young quarterback in a position to succeed. Like, you look around the entire league, Kyler Murray would not have got that big contract if it wasn't for the fact that DeAndre Hopkins was there in Arizona. Like, look at Josh Allen. He didn't take off until he got Stephon Diggs. I don't know what the ceiling is for Mac Jones, but right now I have no clue of knowing what the answers are and if Mac Jones is a good quarterback or not, because year one he showed me something, but year two, his regression was all because, I thought, of three things. Kind of what you're saying, that Bill did not get enough offensive talent around him, but more so Patricia and Joe Judge just being in charge and having the keys to, you know, I don't want to call Mac Jones a Ferrari, but you get the analogy. You gave him the keys to the car, those two guys, and they basically ran the car right into the guardrail. So it's unacceptable. It is. Now, do you want to hear where Daniel Jeremiah predicted your team to do in this mock draft?
Sure, let's hear it.
At number four, the Indianapolis Colts select C.J. Stroud, quarterback.
So if he has him sitting at four, it's not going to be Bryce Young. C.J. Stroud, okay.
Yeah. Now, I thought just the top five of this was interesting. So he didn't do any trades. He said for his second mock draft, I'm not doing any trades. It's too early in the process to predict trades. He had the Bears taking Jalen Carter one. I think we're both in agreement here that the Bears will not keep the number one pick and they're going to trade back. And they're not going to take a quarterback anywhere in the first round. Would you be in agreement on that one?
Yes.
Two, the Texans with Bryce Young. Three, the Cardinals. Tyree Wilson, he ended up going. So you had the first defensive player off the board, Jalen Carter. If Carter is the first defensive player off the board, then everyone would think it's Will Anderson Jr. He ended up going with Tyree Wilson.
Interesting.
Right? Like, I think everywhere that we've seen it, it's either been Carter or it's been Will Anderson Jr. That's just been the debate, who's one and who's two. But he said first edge rush off the board over Will Anderson Jr. There's a lot of love for Wilson around the league. His combination of size, length, and production has teams very intrigued out of Texas Tech. And then he has C.J. Stroud going to the Colts. Will Anderson Jr. 5 to the Seahawks. I'll just give you the top 10 here. Miles Murphy, 6 to the Lions. Will Levis, 7 to the Raiders. Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa going to the Falcons at 8. Peter, how do you say his last name? The Northwestern offensive
Skoronsky?
Lineman? Skoronsky. That's such a good football name. To the Panthers at 9. And then at 10, he has Devon Witherspoon, the corner out of Illinois, going to the Eagles.
Wow, so two quarterbacks in the top 10.
Three.
You said Will Levis?
Yeah, Will Levis at 7.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, the only other thing that I'm intrigued by, I had Dalton Kincaid going 15 to the Packers, but I'm trying to see where he puts Anthony Richardson. Oh, wow. I actually like this prediction here. Now, I don't know if he'll be available then, but he has Anthony Richardson falling to the Lions at 18. If the Lions could double dip, and remember, they have a pick at 6, and he has them taking Miles Murphy out of Clemson. And if he could then come back at 18 and there's a quarterback still available, especially Anthony Richardson, who people still think needs another year or two of development, and you have Jared Goff under contract, you know Jared Goff would, I think, be a team-friendly guy and a good locker room guy, and you could then hand the baton off in a year or two to Anthony Richardson and see what you have that quarterback. Like, I sometimes think, Hickey, we overvalue draft picks. And what I mean by that, I want to be clear. I'm not saying draft picks aren't important, but I think sometimes people get so caught up in taking risks in the draft. And I think sometimes you have to see what the risk is and what the reward is. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's the 18th overall pick. But if Anthony Richardson ends up developing and blossoming and being a great quarterback, then it's absolutely worth it at 18. And when you already had a first-round pick to use your second first-round pick on a quarterback, I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. And I think the potential risk would be worth what the reward would be. And I would take the gamble, where I know a lot of right nerds are going to tell me, oh, and you know, at 18, well, why are you going to take Anthony Richardson? He's still 2 years away, blah, 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 blah. Like, I think sometimes people, they do too much analysis when it does come to some of these draft picks, and they overprotect him a little bit.
I'm not a big Anthony Richardson fan, but I think that's a home run for the Lions. Like I said, you get a much-needed help on the defensive line, especially on the interior, and if you can get a project that, again, I know it's your second-round pick, but it's still in the first, or second first-round pick, so it's still in the first round, but I feel like because it's your second pick, it's a little less pressure on him than if he was the number 4 or 5 overall pick. So you give him a year, maybe 2 years to sit behind Jared Goff, seeing how Jared Goff plays in 2023, and you may set yourself up to maybe one day do what the Chiefs did with Patrick Holmes and Alex Smith, where he had a solid guy. He took a big gamble. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, although...
Again, maybe with Love.
So, yeah, I like it a lot. I like it a lot for the Lions. You can get best of both worlds.
Yeah, you go out, you get an edge rusher, and then you're going out, and you also get a quarterback, potentially. We'll see how they develop, but how many times the teams miss on the first round? You have a second first-round pick? I would not have a problem with that approach if that's what the Lions did. Now, I'll just ask you one more, and then we'll take a break, and we'll get to a news brief. If that is true that the Raiders get Will Levis at 7, you think Raiders fans would be happy with that?
Honestly, I don't think so, because, like, what direction are you going in? Last year, they went all in with Davante Adams.
Yes.
This year, you cut Derek Carr, and then you draft a project in Will Levis. You're going to trade Davante then?
No, I don't think you would trade Davante Adams. That would be disservice to your own quarterback.
In a rebuild? Like, where are you going? Would Davante even want to stay? I don't know.
Well, wouldn't it be really what David Ziegler said the other day? I know he talked about not being able to necessarily find that answer at quarterback maybe this offseason. This would be different of that. But what I was getting at yesterday was I thought he was kind of preaching patience. Maybe Mark Davis is not in line with his fan base. And I would think that this is a massive year where you have to have some success this year if you're the Raiders to justify bringing back McDaniels and Ziegler. We've seen a lot of, right, owners drink the Kool-Aid of what coaches and GMs sell them, even when their fan base isn't always necessarily seeing it. So maybe McDaniels and Ziegler think, okay, we get a developmental year here with Will Levis, and then really year number 3 is go time, where we got to get the most out of him.
I guess all I'd say is a warning, if you will, to Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. Look what happened in Chicago. We thought the same thing, although they got Justin Fields, Matt Nagy, and Ryan Pace, who came into the year on the hot seat.
Oh,
now,
I didn't think
all
that.
Of a sudden, they're off because you get a quarterback, so you think the first year's a wash, fired after year one. So if you think that, oh, if we're going to draft a rookie quarterback, that's going to buy us a little extra time, not always the case.
But those guys were there a lot longer. I know it's been just a disaster in the first year, but they were there a lot longer. I think it's a difference when you're in what is now year number 2, and this is the first selection that the offensive guy gets on who his quarterback's going to be for the future. We'll get to news brief on the other side. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, Eric Bieniemy met the media today as he was introduced as the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders. Eric Bieniemy and why he wanted to be the OC for the Commanders.
Why not Washington? Look at all the talent. Look at the players that they have. Okay? Look at the guys that they have on defense. So I'm excited about this opportunity. I've known Coach Ron now since 1999. So relationships mean something.
You think he's really excited for this opportunity, Hickey? Or is this something that he goes, I have to do this if I want to be a head coach, because even though I did an incredible job and I'm deserving of a job with what I've done in Kansas City, it's not working for me getting a head coaching job, whatever the reasons are right now. So now I have to go to the Commanders, and I wonder if he takes that as like, yes, let's go to the Commanders. Let me prove everyone wrong, and I'll be a head coach this time next year? Or is it, man, I really don't want to leave Kansas City. I love working with Patrick Mahomes. I like the relationship that I have with Andy Reid. And it just stinks that this is the situation and why I feel like I have to go to the Commanders. So like, I'm trying to figure out which way that is on if he's actually genuinely excited to go to the Commanders.
I would probably say it's the former, where it's like if he could have gotten a head coaching job just staying in his current role as the Chiefs OC, I think he never would have left.
Yes, I agree with that.
Like, I don't think that he's like...
I hate to say it.
I think he had to leave because, like I said, he felt like he has to leave in order to get a head coaching job. It's like he was racing the Commanders and saying, this is the job for me.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but with the way that this has gone the last 2-3 years, I think the only way he would have been a head coach if he stayed with the Kansas City Chiefs is if Andy Reid eventually retired and then they promoted within and he got the job. But with that being said, those things always do get tricky because whenever you kind of have a coach in waiting and you have a legend that you're waiting for to retire, we see those legends usually be very, very stubborn in terms of how long it takes them to leave the job because they're addicted to it as well, and they're great. Now, I will say, I love what Mahomes tweeted out today. And maybe that could help in this process when you have the best player in the league tweeting out, there should be no question on how great of a man and coach Eric Bieniemy is. His leadership has direct impact on the player and person I am today. 10-plus years learning under one of the greatest coaches of all time, and I cannot wait for him to continue to prove the doubters wrong. So that's what Patrick Mahomes did write on Twitter. Eric Bieniemy's asked if he took this job in order to increase the likelihood of getting a head coaching opportunity in the future.
Being a head coach right now is not in my thought process. Right now, here's what I'm focused on. I'm focusing on being the best coach that I can be today, okay? The rest of everything else will take care of itself starting tomorrow. I live in the moment, okay? So I got to be implanted, and Nikki know exactly what I'm about to say. I got to be where my feet are. So right now, my feet are planted right here.
That is a great... That feels like a head coach who's talking right there. And I know some people say, oh, well, maybe he doesn't interview well. Every time I hear Eric Bieniemy give an interview, I just go, how can people say this guy doesn't interview well? Because he always gives you a good quote or a way that a head coach should respond to something. Like, he didn't answer the question there. We all know what the answer is. Yeah, he took that job because he wants to be a head coach. But he did a good job there with some coaches speak there, Hickey.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good job there. I don't know how he interviews in actual meetings, but so far, so good.
And Eric Bieniemy, this was one that I also loved as well. Bieniemy reacts to the dumb comments by LeSean McCoy, or not dumb comments, I shouldn't say that, just the comments by LeSean McCoy that were like filled, what's the word I'm looking for? Not jealousy. He was annoyed with what Tyreek Hill said. He was annoyed with him because he told him basically protect the ball more.
Hold on to the ball. Maybe some spite.
Spite. Yeah, that was like the gotcha kind of moment from LeSean McCoy. So Bieniemy responded to those comments that he didn't do anything for the Chiefs offense.
LeSean McCoy is a future Hall of Fame runner, okay? Everybody's entitled to their own position, to their own comments and how they feel. When it's all said and done with, I think that's all I have to say because he's entitled to his own opinion. That's life, okay? You got good and you have bad, you know? It does not impact me in any way. Because one thing that you learn when you're in this position, you have to learn to eliminate distractions, all right? My job is to focus on the now. Everything outside these walls has no impact on Eric Bieniemy moving forward.
Now, if we shot him up with some truth serum, I bet he has some not-so-nice words for LeSean McCoy. But once again, eliminating the distraction, adding more legs to that story. Let's hear one more from Bieniemy. Bieniemy on his early scouting reports on Sam Howell, who is projected to be QB1 of the Washington Commanders.
I can only base my evaluation on what he did coming out of college. Now, I did have an opportunity to see him play in that last game against the Dallas Cowboys. The kid is a dynamic football player. He can make throws from different platforms. You can tell he has a baseball background. The thing that got me fired up was when he ran in on that touchdown, he flexed. So that was some good stuff.
So there you go. That's a little bit from the Eric Bieniemy press conference today. Last night, the biggest story in sports was obviously Brandon Miller going to the basketball court in South Carolina and playing up against the Gamecocks. He had a sensational game as the Crimson Tide did find a way to survive in overtime by 2. And Miller just made big play after big play. in that victory at 41 points, or 6 of 13 from 3, 14 to 25 from the field. But obviously, if you listened to us yesterday, we talked about this story. There was a lot in Brandon Miller's role potentially in what was a murder and driving the car that had a gun in it and everything along those lines that we did discuss in full length yesterday. Nate Oates the other day when he was walking off the court in practice ended up doing a press conference, and there were some insensitive comments made by the Alabama men's head basketball coach. And here is Nate Oates apologizing for his response on Tuesday when discussing Brandon Miller's involvement.
I want to address yesterday's press conference and my response to the Brandon Miller question. I'm not here to make excuses, but I want to make it clear that I didn't have the details from the hearing that morning since I was coming straight from practice. And I used a poor choice of words, making it appear like I wasn't taking this tragic situation seriously, which we have throughout the course of it. I sincerely apologize for that. I know Greg shared some information earlier today on the situation. I don't really have anything more to add other than what he's already shared.
And you heard one side, and then you heard the other side as well involving Brandon Miller's involvement in this entire just tragic situation. And I saw Brandon Miller's attorney yesterday release a statement. We read it on the air. And at the end of the statement, it was everything that we are claiming didn't happen or did happen with our client was captured on video and the police have it. So you could say that if what you feel like is on the video shows that your client didn't do anything wrong, then it better be true whenever we find out what is on that video. And the attorneys for Brandon Miller made it clear yesterday that he did not know that the gun was in the car until he was already driving to go pick up Darius Miles. And also, he never transferred the gun. It was Miles who ended up doing that. That's just what the attorney said yesterday. But they said everything they have is on video, so we'll see what happens there. It just comes down to who do you believe in this situation when it comes to Brandon Miller. Alabama, we know, made their decision. He's not criminally charged, all right? The police said that they have nothing to charge him on. They wouldn't even know what to charge him on. So from the Alabama standpoint, if he's not getting charged, you could definitely say, hey, you don't think he should play. But then on the other side, if nothing ever happens further with Brandon Miller, how do you then determine when is the right time to bring him back? And you know what would happen if they did suspend him. He'd be back for the SEC tournament if no charges or no other further information did come about. But last night, obviously, this story has been a big story, but Brandon Miller had a sensational game on the court, and it's always going to be a story with Alabama the rest of the year on when you see their best player, something could be the second overall pick in the draft, and this is not going to go away anytime soon, and we'll see what other information does come out. But Nate Oates, when talking to the media last night, says he isn't shocked by Brandon Miller's 41-point performance.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the most mentally tough kids I've ever coached. So, not surprised. I mean, 41 points, you don't want to say you expect that, but not surprised he came ready to play and played well tonight.
So that's the latest yesterday when we did see Brandon Miller, after everything that was discussed in court, get back onto the basketball court. And you see what happened in the legal world, obviously. The whole story is just absolutely heartbreaking. And he plays last night and he drops 41 points in a 78-76 win in overtime. But obviously his performance on the basketball court is not the biggest story. What happens off the court and what his involvement is continues to raise a lot of questions and dominate the headlines, obviously, and deservedly so. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. That is a news break.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
You know what, Hickey? I think I may order a Giannis Antetokounmpo jersey.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I'm not really, like, I saw someone tweeting me today. They were like, oh, you wear a jersey to work? Like, I wore a jersey to work yesterday because I was talking to Joe Klecko and I had a Temple Joe Klecko jersey. Now, I know a lot of people may not put that connection to Temple and Joe Klecko together because you obviously think about him being with the Jets, but that's where he got his start as a college football player at Temple University. I'm not usually someone that wears a jersey to work, but when you're in sports media and you host sports radio, I don't think it's a violation to wear a jersey to work. But I think with how supportive our four affiliates in the state of Wisconsin have been of this show, especially 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee, and how they've treated me just with the first-class treatment when I went to Milwaukee, I think I should buy a Giannis Antetokounmpo jersey. And now, like, I know the basketball team that I grew up rooting for in the Brooklyn Nets, they have a respectable record, and you have Bridges there now, but does anyone think the Nets are going to do anything with Kevin Durant no longer on the team and Kyrie Irving no longer on the team? Like, I know they're 10 games above 500, but they don't have a chance to go to the finals. So I've been very happy with the way the Milwaukee Bucks have played the last few years, and I kind of led that charge, sign the Supermax, keep the Greek Freak. I think it's time I invest in a Milwaukee Bucks jersey.
Interesting. For me, at least, I'm not someone who would get a jersey of a team I don't root for. I'm with you. Wearing jerseys in sports, radio, who cares?
Yeah,
you
right?
Wear, it's not that, it's not
some
that
people
big of a
freak
deal.
Out.
Opening day in Mets, I'm going to be wearing a Mets jersey. It's you're showing some pride.
Do you ever have a jersey for a team that you don't root for?
As a gift, because when I was in college, someone I knew worked the NBA All-Star game, and she got me a Damian Lillard NBA All-Star jersey. So I like Dame a lot.
I didn't know that we shared that bond for Damian Lillard, who up until the other day was my favorite player in the NBA. Now it's Anthony Edwards.
Otherwise, no jerseys of, well,
that's
I guess
not
if
true.
You count the Russell Wilson jersey.
That counts. You have a Russell Wilson Broncos jersey.
I mean, I didn't buy it. I probably won't wear it.
Oh, yes, you would. You said you're going to wear it on the beach this summer.
Maybe.
Come on.
But, you know, I would never actually go buy a Rush jersey, even though I didn't, you know, did have them winning it all last year.
I'm trying to think. I have a Chad Ochocinco jersey when he first did the Ochocinco.
I
customized
okay, so it says Ochocinco.
Yeah,
okay.
I customized it like a few days after he did it. I thought that would be a badass jersey to have. I do have a Chris Paul, I think it's a Hornets jersey that I once bought. I don't know why. I have a Michael Jordan jersey. And I think for teams that I don't root for, that is it. Oh, I have a Michael Strahan jersey that someone got me when I was a kid, even though I'm not a Giants fan.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough considering the Super Bowl.
Well, yes. Someone got it for me. They thought I was a Giant fan as a kid, and my dad was like, I don't know why you got him that. And then I did go to one Giant draft party, actually when Eli Manning got drafted, and I got that signed by a bunch of players. You know, my dad was working, and he took me to a Giants draft party. But outside of that, I'm trying to think. NHL, I only own Ranger jerseys. NBA, I just told you the two that I have. I have a Dr. J one, but that's the team that I root for. Major League Baseball, I've never bought a jersey that is not a Mets jersey. And that's pretty much it. We're going through all the teams. So I think it's time to buy a Giannis Antetokounmpo jersey. Well, maybe I'll purchase one. Got to see what the selection's like these days. And if it's a... if it's the right time to do so.
You're going
to
get a Cream City one?
I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. You know what? Let me look real quickly. Giannis.
With the big Harley Davidson logo on it to let everyone know you ride the hog.
Calm down there.
I'm just speaking the lingo.
That just didn't sound right.
I'm speaking the lingo. I'm doing what, you know, motorcycle riders, or I'm talking how they talk.
Yeah, I think you should never do that again. I think I would maybe just get that classic like green jersey that says Milwaukee.
You want to get the home jersey, it says Bucks, you go Milwaukee.
Yeah. Oh, actually, maybe I'll get, oh, this one's pretty badass with the actual deer on it.
Okay,
I think that would be pretty cool.
Right, it's green, right?
Greenish. This one that I'm looking at is black. Okay. Yeah, actually, that looks pretty tough. Got the black jersey, got a blue stripe, a cream stripe, green as well, and it's got the deer with the antlers. I think that's pretty cool.
All right. Fear the deer.
34 on the front, Antetokounmpo on the back. I also think when you get a jersey, for some reason, I like jerseys that are better when the last name is really long. Like, if you have a short last name, I don't know, it's the way that the company makes it, but I feel like the jersey doesn't look all that great when you have a short last name. Like my name, like Gelb. I don't think Gelb looks good on a jersey. Like Hickey, I think it has enough letters in it.
I would agree with the short, like Ray on the last name would be tough. But also, at the same time, Antetokounmpo, I think too long is also too long. Like, Jared Saltalamacchia, too long. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Who's getting a Jared Saltalamacchia jersey?
You know, I mean, hey.
We're talking about one of the best player, arguably, in the league right now.
Well, we're just talking about just how it looks on a jersey, talent aside.
How would you spell Antetokounmpo? We always talk about how you say it.
I actually have not spelled it in a while, but I used to spell it actually really good.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to write it out. A-N-T.
Yes.
E-T.
Yes.
Antetokounmpo. K?
No.
Hold on. I wrote this so many times.
A-N-T-E-T. You got that.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oh, I know the ending. It's
You've said the letter that you're missing like nine times here.
N-P-O. Giannis Antetokounmpo. A?
Nope.
O?
Yes.
Giannis. All right, so A-N-T-E-T-O-K-O-U-M-N-P-O.
Say the last four letters again.
K-O-U-M-N-P-O.
N-M-P-O? Yeah. Yes. Fourth, fifth time's a charm, I guess. That's not easy. Now, I'll give you one more. By the way, did you see... did you see your favorite basketball coach popped up in the news again?
Who's my favorite basketball coach?
Your favorite basketball coach of all time.
Jim Boeheim?
You don't actually like Boeheim.
No. Hey, I thought you were being sarcastic.
I am being sarcastic, but that's not the one.
Your favorite coach.
Yep. Ugh. You see what he said the other day?
No. What did Coach
says
K
he talks say? To John Shire all the time, but he does not miss coaching. That is what Coach K said.
Still is in office. So, I mean.
Does he really?
Yeah. He didn't give his office up. Look it up.
Oh, well, doesn't he like still have a role with the school in some capacity, but he doesn't miss coaching? That's what he said.
Yeah, also, because I'm sure he's probably telling John Shire every single day what, you know, adjustments to make, coach this, coach that.
Yeah, also, I thought you weren't too kind to Coach K when he was walking out the door last year. I thought that was very disrespectful.
See you later.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad job.
I think I'm in the right. See, I think there's a lot of people.
But you
that
always
don't
think
like
you're
coach
in the right,
K.
Obviously. That's what you say what you say.
Well, I should say, I think it was in the majority. Maybe not in the right. I'll say I was in the majority. That's for sure.
I think you're just in the majority on Twitter, which doesn't really actually reflect society.
No, unless you're a Duke fan. I don't think anyone's
troll.
Rooting for Coach K to have his storybook ending of walking off winning a national championship and just be even more insufferable than he already is.
You don't respect history. You don't respect tradition. And that guy was just an unbelievable, legendary coach. And you just tried to spit in his face when he was walking out the door. Do you know how to spell Krzyzewski?
No, I just know it's KZ.
No, K-Z-Y? You didn't get that right. Nope.
KRZ?
KRZ? Can you go after that? Y? Yep.
No, I literally got nothing.
Just give an extra.
E.
No.
C. H.
Z? Yep.
Another Z?
KRZYZ.
Ugh. I don't even know where we are, to be honest.
Well, you're close with. Just change that a little bit.
A.
No, no, no.
U. O.
E. W, like U. S K I. Krzyzewski. That is probably the most difficult name to spell ever.
Never would have got it. You give me a million chances. I probably would not have had enough combinations to get it correct.
I think your best chance of getting that name correctly is like just taking six or seven shots and then just trying to guess. I think you have a better idea after like six or seven shots of alcohol trying to come up with how you spell that name than if you were completely sober and giving it your all.
I think it would be worse. For me, it would definitely be worse.
Oh, did you just hear yourself try to do it sober? You're not telling me
something? I think it would be 10 times worse if it's drunk. That's for sure.
I don't know about that. I really don't.
I don't think that's going to unlock the spelling of Krzyzewski in my brain. A few pops, that's for sure.
I can see you. All of a sudden, your true colors would come out, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, Coach K, that's my guy. I'm just putting on this front all the time.
No front.
By
no
the way, front. Adam Schefter, I saw this today. That the Rams and nine-time All-Pro linebacker Bobby Wagner have a mutually agreed Thursday to part ways, sources tell ESPN. Schefter adds the Rams need cap space, and Wagner wants to win. He will now be a notable part of this year's free agency class, and Bobby Wagner obviously just came off a really good year after leaving the Seattle Seahawks. Bobby Wagner, basically, from the understanding Adam Schefter had, doesn't think that the Rams can win. Wagner wants to win. I have this theory, and I've been saying it all offseason long so far. All season long. This is barely in the offseason. But I've been saying it for the better part of 2 months. I don't think the Rams are going to have this great redemption story next year. Because you hear Donald, like, inching towards retirement, one foot in, one foot out. Sean McVay, every other year, one foot in, one foot out about retiring. Matthew Stafford, there was some talk about him retiring, but we don't even know how healthy that guy's going to be. Cooper Kupp coming off an injury. If the Rams don't get off to a good start, like, the first four games, I don't think there's more important first four games of a season for any team in the NFL than the Rams. Because if they get off to a slow start with how many guys are like 1 foot in, 1 foot out, I then do think that it's going to be another miserable season for the Rams, even when you have an NFC that is open and could give them a situation to bounce back. But I just don't trust this team. And for Bobby Wagner to basically say after 1 year, I want to go win, that means that he doesn't believe that the Rams are anywhere close to getting back into playoff form or contention.
And they're making cuts on the salary cap. Obviously, they got to get a lot more done before they can get better. So it's not good for the Rams, that's for sure.
And this is not a disgruntled player who is leaving because he wasn't getting enough playing time. Like, Bobby Wagner had a great year this year for the LA Rams. So I think that is a bad sign if you're a fan of the LA Rams. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And we come on back. If the Ravens are going to trade Lamar Jackson, who are some quarterbacks that they could entertain in potential trade offers that they would get back in return to try to not make this ship sink and prevent it from sinking? We'll get to that on the other side. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio.